Before we begin today's show, the UFC returns to Fight Island on Saturday for UFC 253, Adesanya versus Costa and Reyes versus Blachowicz. You don't want to miss this one. UFC 253 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/PPV for more details. And of course, if you want to get yourself up to speed on all the latest in the world of mixed martial arts, then I suggest you check out DC and Helwani with Daniel Cormier and Ariel Helwani, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We are doing so just before midnight on Wednesday night, just after watching the Miami Heat with an impressive victory over the Boston Celtics to move to a 3-1 series lead. And joining me to talk about it tonight from Dallas, you know who it is. It's Tim Band McMahon.
McMahon, howdy, partners.
How you doing?
Fantastic.
And joining us from Los Angeles is Om Youngmasook. Hello, Om. No one is having a better night in America than Tyler Hero, who had, I would assume, the game of his life, scored 37 points in just a white-hot shooting performance in this game for the Miami Heat. This is the kind of thing that when you have a guy like this, and he's been building throughout the whole postseason, but this changes playoff series. When you have a guy step up and have a performance like that, it changes playoff series. And, you know, he was just, I mean, in addition to just hitting everything, he was doing it against everybody. Boston was rotating defenders on him. And the only thing that he struggled in, quite frankly, was in transition. He took it, you know, he's really good at shooting off the run, whether it's coming around a curl, pulling up. And so that makes him so hard to guard. But Boston was throwing everything they had at him. At one point in the fourth quarter, they had Jason Tatum on him, and he was schooling Tatum. He went 3-3 against Tatum. We'll talk more about that later. But McMahon, the Miami Heat are 11-2 in this bubble. They got a lot of things going for them. We've talked about it a lot on this pod over the last month. Tyler Hero is just a game-changing draft pick. And we are seeing him flourish and explode right in front of our eyes.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about the 13th overall pick in the draft. I mean, you know, this dude is playing like he should have been picked second or third, you know, I guess third after Morant. And look, the 37 points, obviously, it's an explosion. You know, it's his, you know, NBA high, the most by a 20-year-old in a playoff game since Magic's famous Game 6 closeout of the NBA Finals as rookie
42.
Year.
42. Yeah, 42.
But I don't think you can say this came out of nowhere, because this dude has been balling all playoffs long. And, I mean, as a 20-year-old, he is a, you know, mid-30-minute-per-game guy for a Miami Heat team that's mowing its way through the Eastern Conference Finals. And obviously, the kid has absolutely no fear of the moment. I mean, the cojones factor for his age, you know, considering that he can't even shave, doesn't even have to shave yet, is off the charts. But I mean,
he's got a little fuzz on the chin.
Little fuzz on the chin, but dude, he is doing things beyond scoring for them. You know, he's rebounding, he's facilitating, and again, it's amazing for a guy that young, who was a mid first round pick, to be this productive, this comfortable, and this confident during a playoff run.
So, you know, the interesting thing is, over the years, the Heat have had a lot of Kentucky players on their roster. Jamal Mashburn, Antoine Walker, we could go on and on. Pat Riley played for Kentucky, played for Adolph Rupp, I'm fairly certain. So he's always had an affinity for Kentucky players. But believe it or not, in 25 years of making draft picks, both first and second round, Pat Riley had never taken a Kentucky player in the draft until Bam Adebayo. And now he's taken two Kentucky players in the late lottery in the last few years, Bam and then Hero. But, you know, this was a guy who had some, you know, who had some pot shots taken at him. You know, he had some limitations, but, you know, he's playing at such an incredible level. I'm not even sure this was in anybody's wildest dreams this early in his career.
No, I heard Coach Cal on the radio earlier today talking about Pat Riley drafting Bam and Hero and what the thought process was and how he was going to fit right into the Heat culture. I think that the tough thing right now with Kentucky, they have so many talented players. Sometimes it's actually hard to gauge how good a guy may be if he gets lost in the shuffle with so many talented players that Cal recruits. But I got to say this. I mean, like, listen, I don't even think we can call him a rookie anymore, because I remember the first time I saw him at Summer League in Las Vegas. I covered his first game, and I remember thinking at that point, I was like, wow, this kid has a lot of moxie. There's something to this kid that is different. And to see what he was doing against that level of play at Summer League and what he's doing now here inside the bubble, it almost, I got to say, he was playing almost the same he was in Las Vegas. It was strange. He's just not rattled at all. He can score different levels, which is amazing for his age already. And he's versatile, and he's a little awkward as far as a defender trying to stop him. As you were saying, he can score off balance. He can score off the run. He can drive. He can dribble. He reminds me a little bit of another Kentucky player, Rex Chapman, in the way that he can hit off balance shots a little bit. So, you know, I think you're right, Wendy, that a performance like this can change a series, because Boston has the defenders to throw at guys like Jimmy Butler, but I don't think they were counting on Tyler Hero to have a game like this. As Bam McMahon said, second to my fellow Spartan Magic Johnson, and now his confidence, which was already, I think, unshakable, has got to be soaring. The Miami Heat, one game away from the NBA Finals, and Eric Spoelstra, man. I you know what? It's like I give Eric Spoelstra all the props all the time and say this guy's one of the best coaches in the league, and yet he continues to surprise me all the time. That zone is just so awesome to watch. Well, I don't know. You guys probably hated it. Maybe the rest of America hated today's pace.
Well, we'll talk about the zone in a second. But you mentioned him, you know, sort of delivering in a playoff game. Let me tell you how important his performance was. The Miami Heat, as you know, are reliant on their defense, which they played well in the zone, and also on three-point shooting. And tonight, Hero was 5 of 10 on threes. And it felt like he hit like 8, but he hit 5 of 10. The rest of the Heat are 5 of 27 on threes, okay? They only shoot 42% as a team. You know, Crowder, 1 of 7. Duncan Robinson, who's a key shooter for them, 0 of 4. Andre Iguodala, 1 of 4. They were not getting it done from the perimeter without Hero's shooting tonight. And here's a stat as well. In the half court, this is from ESPN Stats and Info. In the half court, he was 9 of 10 tonight shooting against contested. You know, they were contesting his shots against contested, on contested shots. He's 9 of 10. That's the difference between this series being 2-2 and 3-1. And the Celtics are going to go back, and they're going to hang their head, and they're going to try to figure out what happened. And they had some issues. Tatum had a scoreless half, which is, you know, hard to swallow for a guy who is going to be a max player soon. He had an incredible second half. He had a 28-point second half. So he did not have a poor game, although the offensive foul that he had at the end of the game, that it was reversed, that was a weak, you know, he needs to go stronger there. But the Celtics played well enough to win this game, with the exception of they couldn't control this kid Hero. And that's the difference between, frankly, being a conference finals team and being a finals team, getting stuff like that, McMahon. And he'd have a lot going for him. And, you know, this kid, you know, Ohm talked about his confidence. You know, it's an old baseball. I think it was in the movie Moneyball, where the scout was talking about evaluating a player's confidence based on his girlfriend. And, you know, it's a sort of an old trope and whatever. It's sort of a funny thing. Hero's confidence is portrayed in his girlfriend, who is an Instagram. I'm not up with all these Instagram IG models. I know some folks.
You ain't sliding in DMs?
No. And she has 7 million followers on Instagram. He, as far as I know, I mean, like, you know, I haven't questioned Tyler about this, but he basically started publicly messaging this Instagram model at the start of COVID, and now they're together and she's in the bubble with him.
Well, hey, so there you go.
If you have enough,
I mean, he got in there tight enough to where he could convince the NBA to let her in the bubble too.
She's in, as far as I know. This is a guy who's sending cold messages to IG to famous IG models.
Shoot your shot, Wendy.
He's connecting. Okay.
He ain't passing down good looks in playoff games.
He's not. I'm making kind of a joke. I don't know what's going on with all of them, but I'm just saying, like, as if you didn't need more evidence of his confidence, there's another thing for his confidence. I know you respect that, McMahon.
I mean, listen, I respect it. I wonder, you know, why a guy who played well for a playoff team in Miami all season long was single at that point, but perhaps that was by choice. Everything about Tyler Hero's performance in the bubble, that included, certainly fits into the umbrella of Cajones Factor Rookie of the Year material. Love
that. McMahon, you know that was by design that he was single up until the pandemic, and then he probably didn't get booed up in quarantine. That's all.
You know what? That is a good strategy. That's a good strategy.
McMahon, I think you... No, never mind. I won't say
it. I got booed up in quarantine myself.
I was going to say, I wasn't going to say anything, but all right. I mean, at the beginning of this quarantine, you were living in an apartment eating frozen pizzas. We were updating your frozen pizza account. Let's just say...
I've never eaten better in my life.
Okay. We're going to leave it right there. My one Tyler Hero story, over All-Star Weekend... last few years, I've gone and interviewed a bunch of the rookies who are going to be in the rookie game or the other things. And so I had about 15 minutes with Tyler in Chicago this year, and he was injured. He couldn't actually play because he had an ankle injury, which COVID actually helped him recover from. Mm-hmm. I don't know where his ankle or his foot was going to be, you know, in a playoff setting had he not had those months. So this is a guy who actually has benefited from this. I remember they got the interview. He's a very intense guy, and you actually saw it a little bit in his interview. If you watched his interview with Rachel Nichols after the game, where he didn't know where to stand, he'd never done a walk-off before, you know. So Rachel had to sort of direct him where to go. But he's a very intense guy, you know. He's got a very intense eyes, and when you talk to him, you know, he's very, very focused on it. But what I remember about it is, unfortunately, Kobe had just died, and we were asking young guys about their favorite Kobe memories. And he told me his favorite Kobe memory was when Matt Barnes faked throwing the ball in at Kobe's face and Kobe didn't flinch. He loved that because he thought it epitomized Kobe. So we end the interview and we're packing up, and I can't remember if he was on crutches or just had a boot or whatever. He's getting ready to go. And I sort of made a passing comment. I go, yeah, you know about that Matt Barnes play, you know, it wasn't actually in his face. It was off to the side. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I go, oh, well, there's an overhead angle where you can see that Kobe was actually standing, you know, to the side, sort of shading, and Barnes faked the other direction. It was just a camera, you know, a camera illusion. It wasn't actually right in his face. And he's like, I don't believe you. And so actually, I think Rob Perez, who's well known on Twitter as Worldwide Wob, I think he actually brought this to my attention. He somehow got the overhead camera shot because it was a baseline inbounds play. And you can see from the baseline shot, assuming it's the same. I mean, I guess I can't say in today's world of things changing, but it's assuming it's the same play. It certainly looks like it. Kobe is standing, you know, a little bit to Barnes' left, shading him, and Barnes fakes sort of straighter to the right. Doesn't mean that Kobe wouldn't, I mean, with all you Kobe fans out there, doesn't mean he wouldn't have flinched if it wasn't at his face or whatever, but I showed it to Tyler. I called up and I found the tweet that Rob put it's like a year or so ago. And I showed it to him, and he watched it like three or four times, and he was like crestfallen. And I actually kind of felt bad. I was
why'd you have to do that?
I know. I kind of felt bad. Yeah, I was like,
Did you tell him about Santa Claus too?
Seriously, Wendy?
I mean, he's just my point is he's a very intense guy.
Well, go ahead and tell him about the Tooth Fairy now too.
And I think that serves him well because he's comfortable in that sort of intensity.
You know what would have been awesome to see, and I'm not taking anything away from his performance tonight, but to see how he would have reacted and played in in an environment where he was on the road in the playoffs with fans, you know, like I obviously tonight was a home game for the Heat, but it, you know, it's just that this is his first playoffs is not, he's not faced basically a hostile environment. I actually think his demeanor and his attitude is suited for that. I think he would play well in that, but right now he doesn't even know what that's like, you know?
It's a good point. Although, you know, playing at Kentucky, you know, I think he's seen some serious environments, although he never had a game at Kentucky when he played a year. The crazy thing is, and I know we're in the fall, so it doesn't quite fit cyclically, but 2 years ago, this guy was playing high school basketball, you know, spring of 2018, he's playing high school basketball.
Well, and he looks like a kid too. I mean, he's skinny, he's baby faced. He looks his age.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So a couple things. First off, a little worried we're going to hear, I don't know, I don't think we'll hear it tonight, but hear about Bam Adebayo, what will happen with him, because he played the last 3 or 4 minutes of this game basically not using his left hand. And regardless what it might mean for game five, you know, it's worrisome going forward if that's a serious wrist injury. So that's a key thing going forward. You know, and I don't know if that's something we'll find out. You know, Spoelstra tonight, his quote was, he's icing it, which is about what I'd expect from Spo, quite frankly. So we'll see what happens there. That's one thing. The other thing is, you mentioned, Ohm, the Celtics had problem with the zone for a long time. By the way, Bam's quote was, I'm good. So
it almost looked like he was holding his wrist, but it almost at the same time, he was kind of trying to shake off his shoulder. It was almost like the way his shoulder looked limp, his whole arm, it looked like he had a stinger or something like that.
Maybe. But you mentioned the zone. The Celtics, first off, I don't think I don't have a photographic memory. I can't remember seeing in any NBA game, much less a late round playoff game where a team played so much zone. I never remember seeing that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe somebody can produce me that the Heat played more zone in other games, but I certainly didn't feel like I'd seen that before. They pretty much played zone the whole second half. And it really bothered the Celtics for a long time. They eventually started making some.
I was going to say, it didn't bother them in the second. It bothered them in the first half. Second half, they scored 65 points.
Still, though, they should be better at this, don't you think?
Well, did they figure it out in the second half? And that'll be interesting to see going forward. And obviously, you know, one thing is when Jason Tatum makes shots, the Celtics are a lot better team. I don't know if he, you know, I don't know what was up with him in the first half. There, you know, people were wondering, is this guy hurt or whatever? And then he comes out and scores 28 in the second half. So, you know, maybe he needed some time to get his legs under him, to kind of get a feel for, it's weird to say get a feel for what they're doing defensive, because it's not like this is the first time they sprung the zone on him. They've been playing it all series long. Maybe he just had a dud of a half. But, you know, anytime Jason Tatum goes scoreless in a half, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Celtics, it's going to be an ugly half for him.
Yeah, think about the reason that teams stopped playing zone decades ago so much is that the zone isn't actually that hard to beat with NBA talent. And so it's a good changeup. It's not something
in theory, right? But the Lakers used it against the Nuggets to make that comeback.
But they sprang it on them, and it was like, it was a 1-2-2. I mean, like, that was a curveball that was sort of out of desperation. It was not a baseline principle for how they play.
Yeah, Spoelstra's using it like he's Jim Boeheim or something.
You know what? It did remind me of a Syracuse game, quite frankly.
Frankly,
Bam Adebayo reminded me of some of the guys that Syracuse has had when they've been really great, when they've had guys like Hakeem Warrick and stuff in there. not to compare Akeem Warwick to Bam Adebayo, but the same sort of
Big East Akeem Warwick.
Well, actually, the Miami Herald did a story after, I think it was game two. They called Jim Boeheim up to ask him what he thought about the Miami Heat zone. And he actually said he thought it was pretty good. And one thing he pointed out was that the Heat...
Wouldn't it have been great if he was like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. The one thing he did point out was that like Syracuse tends to, and obviously maybe McMenamin would be better on this, but Syracuse tends to, recruit guys that are lanky, long, so they can play this zone and be effective, get a lot of deflections. Miami, you know, instead of putting up their smalls up high, they'll put Jimmy Butler up there for a little more length. And then, you know, you'll see another longer defender like Jay Crowder up there, perhaps, to try to disrupt things and then maybe hide their guards in the corners. And so
Iguodala is another one of those Iguodala. Guys. And he played, so Boston, I believe, his so most extended minutes of the playoffs tonight.
Yes, Boston had so many turnovers against that zone.
Yeah, so that I think is an interesting wrinkle to this zone. And at times, Kemba Walker, who did have, he's got to be the zone buster, right? It's got to be him, Tatum. Kemba Walker sometimes could have difficulty trying to get through that first layer of that zone.
They actually had some success when they started throwing the ball to Marcus Smart in the middle. And it was interesting. I saw that DraftKings, who knows? I mean, they're obviously trying to get, attention, but DraftKings mentioned that somebody bet $250,000 tonight on Marcus Smart's over, which was 13. I think it was 12 and a half. So he had 13 or more. The guy would have won $450,000.
Wow.
And Smart was,
you think one of eight from 3-point range hurt that guy's feelings?
So Smart, by the way, had 10. He fouled out with 10 points. He'd been averaging 20 points in the series, but Gordon Hayward had just come back. And so that's probably why it was set there. So they're going to Marcus Smart in the middle, and Marcus Smart is distributing. It was actually kind of helped them get going. I think that guy was probably like, shoot it, Marcus.
He needed to score 13 for the guy to win money.
To win 450
points. Three was huge. The one where Smart pulled up on in transition wide open and missed the three badly. Well,
you could argue that any of the 7 threes he missed were huge, considering he was a 3-pointer short. He was 3 of 12 overall tonight and fouled out. But he had 11 assists. My point is, they were using him as a distributor. Mm-hmm. And I think he had sort of 3 assists in a row at one point in the third quarter, helped break the zone. But, it's something that, Boston, for the talent that they have, and they're deploying that talent, but they don't look comfortable in it. And I think Spoelstra's like, look, I'm going to ride this sucker until they prove they can beat it. And they haven't proven they can beat it enough for him to go away from it.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I mean, look, let's just be honest, like Brad Stevens, people have taken some people, even, there's been some people take some shots at Brad Stevens. I think because he has been so widely well lauded.
He was anointed.
Yeah. Well, also because he's been praised so much for his X's and O's plays. I mean, I remember last summer, people are going to forget it except for Warriors fans. But at the end of game 6 of the finals, Warriors down 2, Steve Kerr draws up this brilliant play that gets Steph Curry an open 3 from the wing. And Curry misses it. If he makes it, we're going to 7. And he misses it. And it was a beautiful play, and it's lost to history because the Raptors are charging on the court. But I remember talking to Steve in the summer when he was coaching for Team USA. And I said, Steve, I just want to tell you that was a great play. And he goes, you know what? That was a Brad Stevens play. I stole that from Brad Stevens. He goes, I got 4 or 5 plays. And I've heard that before. Other coaches say, well, I stole that from Brad Stevens. At the same time, some people think that Brad Stevens gets too much credit. And so the fact that the Celtics have struggled against pretty, while they're talented, it's still a pretty basic defense. I wonder if Brad Stevens is going to hear a little bit about this if the Celtics don't make a Nuggets-esque comeback.
Well, another thing is Eric Spoelstra probably hasn't gotten enough credit over the years, especially when he had the LeBron super team. But there's a reason that Spoelstra is the second longest tenured coach in the NBA. I mean, and so going into this series, all due respect to Brad Stevens, but if you thought the Celtics had some kind of significant coaching advantage, I just think that's misguided.
Yeah, I was thinking today as I was watching Spo, if I was another organization, like say the Sacramento Kings, which probably could never really get their act together, but I was thinking, like, could you ever steal Spo away from Miami? You know, Spo is obviously waiting to maybe eventually take over the reins from Pat Riley. He's a Heat culture for Heat lifer, but could you ever, if you wanted to copy the Heat culture and started another franchise, could you ever steal Spo and say, listen, we'll make you the Pat Riley of this organization or a GM/coach, and how much would it cost?
I don't think so, because one of the things that Spo has been willing to do is he's just taken average raises. You know, I don't know what kind of contract he's on right now. I think they've pretty much stopped announcing his contract extensions, but for a while there, you know, he was in one of the lower paid coaches, and he just keeps taking deals with raises. And, you know, you stay there long enough, you keep getting raises. All of a sudden you're up pretty high. Yeah. And Spo's probably had. I mean, he got the job in 2008, 2008 or 9. He's probably had 4 contracts. And so, you know, I think that's one of the things. And I also think that he respects what he has there.
I mean, you know? I just feel like a lot of people always try to copy the Spurs organization. And I feel like more teams should do the same with the Miami Heat.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
So this month is the 25th anniversary of the Heat hiring Pat Riley as head coach and team president. And the reason it took till September of 1995 for that to happen is because there was a tampering case. He initially agreed to the job in June, and then the Knicks brought tampering charges against the Heat. And it's actually kind of when you look back on it, it's kind of a fascinating story. Riley had 1 year left on his contract, had tried to negotiate an extension with the Knicks. Supposedly, according to the Knicks, had asked for ownership shares. The Knicks were in the process of being sold, and Riley wanted to cut in on the deal. They didn't give it to him, so he didn't extend his contract. So he famously resigned by fax, like a week or 10 days after the Knicks got eliminated from the playoffs. But there was a memo, allegedly, I don't know if it ever became public, but there was a memo that Riley's attorneys had prepared with Riley's demands to the Heat for what he wanted to be the coach and president. And the Knicks got their hands on that memo. And Mickey Arison, the owner of the Heat, I don't think he necessarily accused this guy straight out of leaking the memo to the Knicks, but he said that this guy helped the Knicks. It was one of the owners earlier that year. Mickey Arison had survived this bloody battle to get control of the Heat because there were 3 owners who were sharing control, and he bought them out. It was a long fight. He accused one of the guys he bought out with leaking information to the Knicks, including this memo. But the point is, the memo of what Riley demanded is legendary in 1995. And the memo was dated like 5 days before he sent the fax. And that was the basis of the tampering case. But what he asked for, I guess it was 14 bullet points, things that he asked for. One of them was a 5-year, $15 million contract, which is gigantic money for a coach in 1995. He asked for 10% of the team immediately. Okay. And another 10% that vested over years. He ended up getting a percentage, but not that much. He asked for $300 a day per diem. This is all reported by the New York Times back then. He asked for limousine service to and from games. And he asked for the Heat to buy his house in LA and to buy his house in New York. So he didn't have to go through the process of selling them, so he could immediately buy a house in Miami. The point is, they gave him a lot. They gave him the 5-year contract. They gave him the ownership shares. And then they settled the issue with New York by giving them $1 million and a first-round draft pick. But what a tremendous deal for Mickey Arison, because he hasn't hired a coach in 25 years. Because Riley handed it off to Stan Van Gundy, who was an assistant, and then handed it off to Eric Spoelstra, who was an assistant. I mean, I guess they hired them, but he hadn't done a coaching search in 25 years.
Well, I hadn't done a coaching search in 25 years. And you know, yes, being in Miami helps, but Riley.
But it hadn't helped them up to that point.
Yeah, I'm terrible. Saying, but Riley has also turned that franchise into a premier destination for free agents. Yeah. And that's not something that happens without Pat Riley arriving and you know, basically completely changing the franchise. But not just
that. This is like the fifth iteration of a great team he's built, because he had the team with Mourning and Hardaway. They never made it. They made it to the conference finals, never made it to the finals. Then he had the team with Shaq and Wade, which won a championship. Then he had the LeBron, the LeBron Wade Bosh team, that which won championships. And now this is sort of like the fourth juggernaut team he's built. They've made 19 playoff appearances in 25 years.
And they do it. Listen, like tonight, it was like I'm on Twitter and Dwayne Wade is just, you know, glowing about Tyler Hero. And one of the things he said was, listen, this isn't just a flash in the pan game here. This isn't like he just got red hot. You can tell this is the way Tyler Hero plays. And to me, it just reminded me of how the Heat have been able to find these great players at times, like Dwayne Wade and perhaps now like Tyler Hero, with great scouting. They know what type of players they want. And I think that's like a thing that a lot of franchises, they can never seem to decide on sometimes. And it screws them up. It screws them up for years to come. With the Miami Heat, they know the type of guys they want in their system, whether it's a free agent or whether it's in the draft.
Jimmy Butler has done a great job taking Hero under his wing. He went and worked out with Butler before the season even started. That was a priority for both of them.
Yeah, and they also develop guys. I mean, Duncan Robinson obviously is kind of case A of development, but they develop Bam Adebayo into an all-star at a young age. They've, you know, Tyler Hero is a better player now than he was when he, you know, was drafted a year ago. I mean, part of this is not only do they do a great job scouting and identifying talent and guys who fit, but then they make those guys better players. And it sounds simple, but there's some franchises, the perennial losing franchises suck at developing players.
One thing I will say, you know, the Heat are one game away from being a number five seed to make it the finals. We speculated when this bubble was first conceived back in May about whether or not we could have an outlier situation like in 1999 lockout year where we had an eight seed make the finals.
Your New York Knicks.
That's right. It's not as simple as just like everything fell their way. They have earned it, but the Heat got to fast track their development with this team because they kind of got a season and a half of development, and Hero has been a huge beneficiary of it. I'm sure if you're a Celtics fan, you're very disappointed right now because the Celtics obviously were up big in games one and two, won game three, and you know, had this one within their reach. They actually took a lead after falling. They took a lead in the second half after falling down. I can understand why, as a Celtic fan, you are tearing your hair out and you're frustrated with this, you're frustrated with that. But I think the proper team is ahead here.
Yeah. Yeah. The team that I predicted would win the series. Wendy, who'd you predict would win the series?
I don't make predictions, as you know.
Oh, wow. How gutless of you.
who did you
predict? So my first email I sent in was Heat in seven, and then I immediately changed it to Celtics in seven, going back and forth. I thought my number one thing that I thought was that I thought the Celtics would have an easier time scoring than the Heat, and I was proven wrong. But I want to say one thing, and Wendy, you would know this, having been in Miami and you were close to this. Do you think that we underestimated, or maybe we didn't make a big enough deal of the fact that going into this bubble, the Heat was a franchise and a team with a culture that could thrive in what the bubble was going to be? And the reason why I say this is because when I look at the Clippers, a team that I was with all year long, it became very evident by the end that the Clippers did not want to be in the bubble anymore. And that clearly played. We want to talk about all the problems that they have with chemistry. Sure, it took them a long time. They could never really find it. But I really felt like toward the end, and I'm not trying to take any credit away from the Denver Nuggets, but in that end, in that game seven, they looked like a team that did not want to be in the bubble anymore. Whereas the Miami Heat, from the get-go, and I think we said this on a pod when I was on with you, I think early in the bubble, they were a culture that came in immediately and tried to set up – their meeting room like it was in the arena. They put up all their big posters of all their glory moments and franchise.
Yeah, the Raptors did that too.
But this was a team that they're so hard-nosed. They're so connected. They're so scrappy. They're so like an underdog team that I feel like they're thriving in the bubble atmosphere.
And I agree with that. I think it is susceptible. The way they play does sort of work, that, you know, what they sell their players on. But this team has major talent too.
For sure. They might not be able to get Jimmy to move out of Disney World, though. It might just stay there on a permanent basis.
Well, you know, you've seen the commercial. He gets such great the maid or the, you know, steward or whatever who cleans his room, you know, gets his beer all lined up for him, makes some little towels.
Do we also think the other commercial that Jimmy actually knows the Hall & Oates song? Does he actually listen to Hall & Oates?
You know, I read he gave an interview about that, and like, because it was like during the middle of COVID when they filmed it, and like, I'm pretty sure like his friend filmed it on his iPhone or something. Maybe it was a little bit better than, maybe I'm not telling the story directly, but if that's so, that was pretty well done. That was pretty well done. If that's indeed how that went down.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Let's talk before we go about the other series, who maybe we'll get the winner of, we'll get the Heat. I think you could look at this sort of two ways. If you're a Nuggets fan, you can say Mason Plumlee doesn't, you know, go brain dead there. And, you know, Anthony Davis misses that shot. You know, Jokic flicks it with his fingernail. It's 2-1 Nuggets. If you're a Lakers fan, you could say, man, you know, they've, other than, you know, a couple of bad quarters, they've pretty much dominated the series. I think the thing to me that's been so telling is that the Nuggets role players were so bad in the first two games, and the Lakers role players were so good. I was like, if this keeps up, you know, there's no way the Nuggets can contend. Well, the Nuggets role players showed up in game three, specifically Jeremy Grant. And the Lakers role players struggled. You know, Rondo's miraculous three-point shooting finally tailed off a little bit. And look, LeBron and Anthony Davis are going to go back and forth. Murray and Jokic are going to go back and forth. The role players are going to play a big role here. And, Olm, you've covered Denver a lot. I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm watching these role players starting with game four.
Yeah, Jeremy Grant, Monte Morris, anything they give you is a huge bonus for them. Much in the same way for the Lakers, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, the way he's playing and all the threes that KCP's hitting, huge bonus for them. Or Rondo, and when Rondo's making baskets, because Kuzma has not been that third guy that we thought he would be.
KCP has been great. Yes. Great. The entire
Eventually, the Lakers had to get something back for all the money they spent on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope these last couple seasons, and he's coming through now. He doesn't even look like a guy that has had like knee issues and has been banged up. He looks fantastic. But I would say this with the Nuggets, it's strange because you can see them kind of like, I think that game two, the game two, even though they lost at the buzzer, I think gave them a lot of confidence that, hey, we can beat this Lakers team. We can stick with them. We'll beat them. And then they go up 20. And I think that belief grew even more, even though obviously that lead got dwindled down to 3 or 4 at the end. And then it took a huge game from Murray at the end to win that game. I do feel like they're really, really confident in winning this. But I've always said this going into this series, and I've said this about the Lakers. If Anthony Davis imposes his will and plays like a killer, nobody's beating them. And you can't have Anthony Davis go without a rebound in the first half. He's got to be more aggressive. And when he does that, then all the Nuggets are in trouble, especially Jokic, who could get in foul trouble.
Man, yeah, two rebounds in a playoff game from Anthony Davis. It's like, dude, you hit a buzzer beater, you don't get to take the next game off. And
man, you've talked about Cajone's All-Stars.
Jamal Murray. He's unbelievable. And, yeah, I'm curious to see. You know, it's interesting. You had Jokic after that game saying, I really, truly believe this guy's a superstar. And I think one definition of a superstar is somebody who can, on a, you know, somewhat consistent basis just take over playoff games. And obviously he's done that now in three different series, in each series this postseason. I'm curious to see, is this, you know, Jamal Murray playing the best basketball of his life, is this his peak, or is this, you know, him breaking out? You know, what, how is he going to follow up, however this playoff run ends, how will he follow up on that next season? Because if this is, you know, a sign of things to come for Jamal Murray, the Nuggets are going to be a contender for, you know, a nice little window here, because you know Jokic is a superstar.
McMahon, this comes back to one of the legendary sayings on this podcast that I have said over the years. And it's an old school phrase, and I get made fun of for it. And no, people don't understand it because it's a reference to craps. It's called betting on the come. And that's what old school basketball, that's what old school executives would say when you sign a guy to a contract that he hadn't quite earned yet, but you're wagering, you're making a big bet that he is on the upswing.
Mm-hmm.
Classic example, Andrew Wiggins, Minnesota Timberwolves, bet on the come, and it crapped out. Denver Nuggets gave Jamal Murray a max contract like first week of July 2019. Didn't even doubt it. And, you know, I understand. I mean, at the time, nobody was saying it was egregious, but it was a little bit surprising that they were that aggressive with it. And they did that believing that he was going to mature into the type of player that could be a frontline franchise player. And they have hit seven because it has exploded. And that contract now looks like an absolute no-brainer, absolutely. But he wasn't this guy a year ago when they gave him this deal.
No, he wasn't this guy during the regular season. He was a good player. He wasn't a superstar. He wasn't an all-star. And it's not like during the all-star, it wasn't like, oh, Jamal Murray's just, no, he was a good player. He wasn't even in the all-star conversation.
Well, you know.
But again, he's a young guy. So, you know, maybe this is a case of a guy who, you know, worked on his game during the hiatus and, you know, caught fire and is going to be this type of
dude. Oh, he worked on his game during the hiatus, yeah. If you were paying attention to social media, but I'll be no.
Look, I think what you're seeing is a couple things. One, he loves shooting inside this bubble, but he's also doing it at a clutch rate. I believe he's hit 8 clutch time baskets, according to ESPN stats and info, which I think is second only most in one single postseason to Steph Curry, who had like 9 in 2016. So that is the next level that he stepped up from last year, is the consistency. Last year, Michael Malone told him that you're still a little too inconsistent. We know what we're getting every night with Nikola Jokic, but not so much with Jamal Murray, who one night can maybe have 28 and then score 12. Mm-hmm. But I think the next step he takes next year is still a little more consistency. He doesn't dominate a game from start to finish. He does go through these lulls a little bit, and then he'll turn it on when he has to, much like this entire Nuggets team when they had to turn it on when they're down 3-1. He was incredible in Utah. Then there were some times against the Clippers, and credit the Clippers, they obviously have very long defenders to throw at him, where Jamal Murray was kind of just absent from the game. And you want to see him be able to dominate a game. If he wants to become an elite superstar, a top 10 superstar, he's going to have to dominate defenses throughout an entire game.
Well, he did have a pretty – last year was the first time he made the playoffs. And, you know, they had the 2-7 game series. And he had some moments in those playoffs. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of pretty big games. And I think that seeing that probably iced the Nuggets' decision to give him the max. Let me just give you his – now, he's playing more minutes. You know, so regular season, he played 32 minutes a game. But regular season, he averaged 18.5 points a game. Shot 45% from the field, 35% from three, averaged 3 free throws a game, which is kind of low for a guy who has the ball in his hand that much, averaged just under 5 assists. That was the regular season, which, you know, all pre-COVID. Now, playoffs, holy Moses, 26.6. So 8 more points a game. Now he's playing 39 minutes, so he's getting 7 more minutes, so that's contributing to it. 51% from the field. Now that's a stunning jump. To shoot 51% from the field and the kind of shots that he takes, and in the more minutes you get more tired. You know, I mean that's an unbelievable jump in field goal percentage, and he's now played 17 playoff games. This is not like a good week, averaging 6.5 assists per game. So jumping, you know, an assist and a half per game. So just playmaking more, and getting the line 4 times a game. He could still probably do better there, but that's an incredible come up.
Well, and you talk about last year. Yeah, he had some nice playoff games, you know, but the way their season ended was him going 4 of 18 in a game 7 loss. You know, so it's not like it was, you know, oh wow, he's riding this huge hot, you know, wave of momentum going into to free agency. So they definitely stuck their necks out there. Now, you know, second round game 7 this year, he drops 40 on the Clippers and they blow out the Clippers. I'm sorry though. Even going into the playoffs, if you just said, "Hey, you know, there's going to be a guy in the West who's going to have 4 40-point games, including 2 50-point games in the first couple rounds," how many guesses would it have taken you to get to Jamal Murray?
5, 6.
More than that.
One thing I think in this series, we haven't seen a transcendent game from LeBron yet. Now, part of it is he is setting up Anthony Davis. His stats are good. He's averaging 24 points, 9 rebounds,
had
9 assists,
double.
And shooting 56% from the field. I mean, that's strong. Anthony Davis, by the way, averaging 32, 7 rebounds, lowered by that poor performance in game 3. He's shooting 53% from the field. I mean, these are strong numbers. This is the kind of Anthony Davis, you know, more rebounds, of course, but these are the kind of Anthony Davis numbers that you are looking for in a conference final series. They're getting 58% shooting from Caldwell Pope, 55% shooting from Kuzma. He's not shooting that much, but he's making shots. If Markieff Morris is shooting, he hasn't shot that much, but he's shooting 67%. I don't know if those guys are going to keep up those numbers. And already we've seen after Dwight Howard's game 1 flourishing, Jokic and the referees are kind of getting on him. The Nuggets are working on the refs to keep, you know, Dwight from, you know, some shenanigans.
And by the way, Dwight, like, I appreciate all the trash talk because it's entertaining. But, like, dude, don't talk trash and then get your ass whooped by Jokic. And here's a little secret. Jokic is going to whoop his ass more times than not. Like, Dwight, you know, this whole
right. He had his moment, and it's now
he's playing his role. He's playing his role. You get
what's his role, jackass?
Yeah, I mean, his role is basically
right. Well, look, he's a bit of a clown, but I'm just saying, like, as I read you those numbers, okay, as I read you those Laker numbers, is Caldwell Pope going to continue shooting 58%? He might. Is Kuzma going to continue shooting 55%? Are the Lakers going to continue? Because we've seen them have periods where they've gone cold. From the perimeter. So my point is here, the one place where I think they can go better, I think LeBron can elevate a little bit. The question is, you know, is that going to be something he actually is able
What's
to do?
What's LeBron shooting from 3, Wendy?
Poor. That's, you know, he's shooting 29%.
Because if I'm Denver,
AD is shooting 27%.
When LeBron gets going, and if we've seen throughout his entire career, it's when he's, you know, steamrolling his way toward the rim. And when he got started, when he got hot in that third quarter, what was he doing? He was posting up basically on that left side, backing in, shooting that fadeaway over Grant, and then he got himself going. But if I'm Denver, I'm going to try to create that wall and just let him shoot the 3 all he wants, especially off those screens.
By the way, you know LeBron's pretty damn good when he has a 30-point triple-double, 14 of 23 from the floor, and everyone's like,
yeah,
LeBron needs to show up.
Well, you know, I'm just going to say, the game that Tyler Hero had tonight, which was a difference-making performance that changed the series, basically, LeBron's had about 40 of those in his career, okay? I think we're going to need to see one of those coming up. My experience tells me My feel for this series and my experience tells me the team that wins games four, that wins game four, is winning the series.
My experience tells me a healthy LeBron with an all NBA sidekick is not losing in the conference finals.
And they may win game four.
If they win game four, they're up 3-1. And so now that's when Denver activates.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, I know that's what people are saying, but that's what my feel on this series
is. I think
is.
We get the signature LeBron game in game five. Because if, let's say they win game four, LeBron will look to just shut it down, close them out. I think the big LeBron game comes in game five.
I will say that, you know, one of the things that is a question mark as these series go on, because the Lakers were absolutely gassed at the end of game three because they had to do so much in that comeback. Stamina for these teams is going to, you know, Denver has already shown that it can sort of withstand a long series. Now, maybe there's a culmination effect that catches up with them. We'll see. But the Lakers ran out of gas at the end of that game. It's something to watch because it's every other day now. You know, they don't get any break at all. So it's something to watch for sure. But I am, you know, tomorrow night or tonight, as you guys listen to this podcast, somebody's going to grab that one by the horns. And I would wager on it being LeBron. You know, he's had a couple of big time moments in these playoffs already, but let's see how that goes. But all right. Well, thank you guys for staying up late. Thank you, Ullman and McMahon. Thank you to Troy for putting it back together in Connecticut. Thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will talk to you over the weekend. Everybody have a great end of the week.